Life in the Quarter. Our bistro, for instance, at the foot of the Hotel des Trois Moineaux, a tiny brick-floored room half underground with wine-sodden tables and a photograph of a funeral inscribed Crédit et Mort, and red-sashed workmen carving sausage with big jackknives, and Madame F, a splendid Auvergnat peasant woman with the face of a strong-minded cow, drinking Malaga all day for her stomach, and games of dice for apéritif, and songs about les fraises et les framboises, and about Madelon, who said, Comment épouser un soldat, moi qui aime tout le régiment, and extraordinarily public lovemaking. Half the hotel used to meet in the bistro in the evenings. I wish one could find a pub in London a quarter as cheery. One heard queer conversations in the bistro. As a sample, I give you Charlie, one of the local curiosities, talking. Charlie was a youth of family and education who had run away from home and lived on occasional remittances. Picture him very pink and young, with the fresh cheeks and soft brown hair of a nice little boy, and lips excessively red and wet, like cherries. His feet are tiny, his arms abnormally short, his hands dimpled like a baby's. He has a way of dancing and capering while he talks, as though he were too happy and too full of life to keep still for an instant. It is 3 in the afternoon, and there is no one in the bistro except Madame F, and one or two men who are out of work. But it is all the same to Charlie, whom he talks to, so long as he can talk about himself. He declaims like an orator on a barricade, rolling the words on his tongue and gesticulating with his short arms. His small, rather piggy eyes glitter with enthusiasm. He is somehow profoundly disgusting to see. He is talking of love, his favourite subject. Ah, l'amour, l'amour que les femmes m'ont tué. Hélas, monsieur et dame, women have been my ruin beyond all hope, my ruin. At 22, I am utterly worn out and finished. But what things I have learned, what abysses of wisdom have I not plumbed? How great a thing it is to have acquired the true wisdom, to have become, in the highest sense of the word, a civilized man, to have become raffiné, vicieux, etc., etc. Messieurs et dames, I perceive that you are sad. Ah, mais la vie est belle. You must not be sad. Be more gay, I beseech you. Fill eyes a bowl with Semillon wine. We will not think of themes like these. Ah, que la vie est belle. Listen, monsieur et dame. Out of the fullness of my experience, I will discourse to you of love. I will explain to you what is the true meaning of love, what is the true sensibility, the higher, more refined pleasure which is known to civilized men alone. I will tell you of the happiest day of my life. Alas, but I am past the time when I could know such happiness as that. It is gone forever. The very possibility, even the desire for it, are gone. Listen, then. It was 2 years ago. My brother was in Paris. He is a lawyer. And my parents had told him to find me and take me out to dinner. We ate each other, my brother and I, but he preferred not to disobey my parents. We dined, and at dinner he grew very drunk upon 3 bottles of Bordeaux. I took him back to his hotel, and on the way I bought a bottle of brandy, and when we had arrived, I made my brother drink a tumblerful of it. I told him it was something to make him sober. He drank it, and immediately he fell down like somebody in a fit, dead drunk. I lifted him up and propped his back against the bed. Then I went through his pockets. I found 1,100 francs, and with that, I hurried down the stairs, jumped into a taxi, and escaped. My brother did not know my address. I was safe. Where does a man go when he has money? To the bordel, naturally. But you do not suppose that I was going to waste my time on some vulgar debauchery fit only for navvies. Confounded, one is a civilized man. I was fastidious, exigeant, you understand, with 1,000 francs in my pocket. It was midnight before I found what I was looking for. I had fallen in with a very smart youth of 18, dressed en smoking, and with his hair cut à l'américaine, and we were talking in a quiet bistro away from the boulevard. We understood one another well, that youth and I. We talked of this and that, and discussed ways of diverting oneself. Presently, we took a taxi together, and were driven away. The taxi stopped in a narrow, solitary street with a single gas lamp flaring at the end. There were dark puddles among the stones. Down one side ran the eye-blank wall of a convent. My guide led me to a tall, ruinous house with shuttered windows and knocked several times at the door. Presently, there was a sound of footsteps and a shooting of bolts, and the door opened a little. A hand came round the edge of it. It was a large, crooked hand that held itself palm upwards under our noses, demanding money. My guide put his foot between the door and the step. "How much do you want?" he said. 1,000 francs, said a woman's voice. "Pay up at once, or you don't come in." I put 1,000 francs into the hand and gave the remaining 100 to my guide. He said good night and left me. I could hear the voice inside counting the notes, and then a thin old crow of a woman in a black dress put her nose out and regarded me suspiciously before letting me in. It was very dark inside. I could see nothing except a flaring gas jet that illuminated a patch of plaster wall, throwing everything else into deeper shadow. There was a smell of rats and dust. Without speaking, the old woman lighted a candle at the gas jet, then ambled in front of me down a stone passage to the top of a flight of stone steps.
"Voila," she said. "Go down into the cellar there and do what you like. I shall see nothing, hear nothing, know nothing. You are free, you understand, perfectly free."
"Ah, monsieur, need I describe to you forcément? You know it yourselves, that shiver, half of terror and half of joy, that goes through one at these moments."
I crept down, feeling my way. I could hear my breathing and the scraping of my feet on the stones. Otherwise, all was silence. At the bottom of the stairs, my hand met an electric switch. I turned it, and a great electrolier of 12 red globes flooded the cellar with a red light. And behold, I was not in a cellar, but in a bedroom, a great, rich, garish bedroom, colored blood red from top to bottom. Figure it to yourselves, monsieur et dame. Red carpet on the floor, red paper on the walls, red plush on the chairs, even the ceiling red, everywhere red, burning into the eyes. It was a heavy, stifling red, as though the light was shining through bowls of blood. At the far end stood a huge, square bed, with quilts red like the rest, and on it a girl was lying, dressed in a frock of red velvet. At the sight of me, she shrank away and tried to hide her knees under the short dress. I had halted by the door. "Come here, my chicken," I called to her. She gave a whimper of fright. With a bound, I was beside the bed. She tried to elude me, but I seized her by the throat, like this, you see, tight. She struggled. She began to cry out for mercy. But I held her fast, forcing back her head and staring down into her face. She was 20 years old, perhaps. Her face was the broad, dull face of a stupid child, but it was coated with paint and powder, and her blue, stupid eyes, shining in the red light, wore that shocked, distorted look that one sees nowhere save in the eyes of these women. She was some peasant girl, doubtless, whom her parents had sold into slavery. Without another word, I pulled her off the bed and threw her onto the floor. And then I fell upon her like a tiger. Ah, the joy! The incomparable rapture of that time. There, monsieur et dame, here is what I would expound to you. Voilà l'amour! There is the true love. There is the only thing in the world worth striving for. There is the thing beside which all your arts and ideals, all your philosophies and creeds, all your fine words and high attitudes are as pale and profitless as ashes. When one has experienced love, the true love, what is there in the world that seems more than a mere ghost of joy? More and more savagely, I renewed the attack. Again and again, the girl tried to escape. She cried out for mercy anew, but I laughed at her. Mercy, I said. Do you suppose I have come here to show mercy? Do you suppose I have paid 1,000 francs for that? I swear to you, monsieur et dame, that if it were not for that accursed law that robs us of our liberty, I would have murdered her at that moment. Ah, how she screamed, with what bitter cries of agony. But there was no one to hear them. Down there, under the streets of Paris, we were as secure as at the heart of a pyramid. Tears streamed down the girl's face, washing away the powder in long, dirty smears. Ah, that irrecoverable time! You, monsieur et dame, you who have not cultivated the finer sensibilities of love, for you such pleasure is almost beyond conception. And I, too, now that my youth is gone, ah, youth, shall never again see life so beautiful as that. It is finished. Ah, yes. It is gone. Gone forever. Ah, the poverty, the shortness, the disappointment of human joy. For in reality, car en réalité, what is the duration of the supreme moment of love? It is nothing. An instant, a second, perhaps, a second of ecstasy, and after that, dust, ashes, nothingness. And so, just for one instant, I captured the supreme happiness, the highest and most refined emotion to which human beings can attain. And in the same moment it was finished, and I was left to what? All my savagery, my passion, were scattered like the petals of a rose. I was left cold and languid, full of vain regrets. In my revulsion I even felt a kind of pity for the weeping girl on the floor. Is it not nauseous that we should be the prey of such mean emotions? I did not look at the girl again. My sole thought was to get away. I hastened up the steps of the vault and out into the street. It was dark and bitterly cold. The streets were empty. The stones echoed under my heels with a hollow, lonely ring. All my money was gone. I had not even the price of a taxi fare. I walked back alone to my cold, solitary room. But there, monsieur et dame, that is what I promised to expound to you. That is love. That was the happiest day of my life. He was a curious specimen, Charlie. I describe him
just to show what diverse characters could be found flourishing in the Cockdoor Quarter.